This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, like I said, it's November. We've had a crazy week in college football with cancellations. Knock on wood, the ACC so far so good. It appears that we're moving forward to a week of games. At least I hope so. And you've got the proceedings going on at Augusta National today with the Masters in November, which if there's never a snapshot of hey, this is what 2020 looks like, the Masters in November and cancellations in college football. I mean, that's kind of what we are, isn't it? I mean, it's really, it's 2020 in a nutshell as far as the sports calendar goes.
I would say our Masters coverage will come up later in this hour during an edition of True or False Pack.
Oh, okay.
Elsewise, we have one of the biggest Thursday shows I can recall. Irish Schofel will join us in a moment from warchant.com. The voice of the BC Eagles, John Mita Perel, will be here. Valentin Noel of Pittsburgh's men's soccer team will join us. The Panthers have had a marvelous season, and we look forward to visiting with him. Old friend Danny Cannell stops back by. He'll talk about the Noles. And, of course, BC linebacker extraordinaire, legend, and ACC football analyst Mark Herslick will be here before we put a wrap on it at 10 o'clock. And you may say, well, Danny Cannell and Irish Schofel are here. Yes, because Florida State's at the front of the show today. Doings yesterday in Tallahassee where Mike Norvell's Wednesday presser seemed more like a transaction wire at the start when he announced that Marvin Wilson and Devontae Love Taylor will miss the remainder of the regular season with injury. James Blackman is going to enter the transfer portal. And Tamarian Terry is no longer with the team, Pack. Boom, 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 just like that. And all of a sudden, you're thinking, wait a second. Two of the best players that Florida State had coming into the year are no longer on the field for the Noles the rest of the season.
It's unfortunate. If you're a Florida State fan, you got to be bummed out. If you're Mike Norvell and the staff, certainly bummed out. But we've talked a lot about Florida State, right? I mean, this is still a team with talented players. It's a team that has really struggled. They've got two wins. One's Jacksonville State. The other one, of course, is North Carolina. Makes tons of sense, right? It's college football. But they've been so wildly inconsistent. I gave you the stat earlier this week about second half offensive production. Last three games, they've scored a grand total of 2 points. You take Jacksonville State out, the other six ACC games, they've scored a grand total of 18 points in the second half. They've had quarterback issues. They've had offensive line issues. They've got really talented players in spots on defense, but yet when you look at the numbers on the defensive side, they're through the roof in terms of points given up, margins, and everything else. They're just wildly inconsistent. You knew Mike Norvell, when he accepted the job, that this was going to take some time. Now, this wasn't going to happen overnight. And then you throw in a pandemic where you have no spring, you have no summer. You have the disruptions of all the social and racial unrest in the country and the way Florida State's players reacted and how they got together, coaches and staff and players and everybody else. So, you know, nothing has been easy in Tallahassee. And you know what? Getting back to elite status isn't going to be easy either. However, I will say this. There are a lot of schools that will say, man, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. We're going to be a college football playoff contender. We're going to win championships. Mm. You hear it all the time. Here's what I do know. I do know that you can do that at Florida State. I've seen national champions in Tallahassee. I've seen teams dominate the conference in Tallahassee. I've seen Heisman Trophy winners in Tallahassee. You're in a state that, you know what, will always, always produce great talent. You've got a national brand. But right now, and really for the last couple years, the tail end of Jimbo Fisher, all of Willie Taggart, and what Mike Norvell has inherited, it's going to be a difficult short term. I just hope folks are patient. Mike Norvell is a good football coach.
Yep.
He knows how to put this thing together. But it is going to take some time. And that announcement yesterday, when I heard it, was I shocked? I was not. I talked on Monday about the lack of effort. Wes, you did the game Saturday. You know what? Florida State's got better personnel than getting waxed at Louisville, than losing by a bunch at home to Pittsburgh. They got better players than that. And I know the year has gotten sideways, but I just hope Florida State fans – players, coaches, administrators, just take a deep breath and say, okay, you know what? Roll up your sleeves. Let's get to work and understand that if we do it right, we can get back to where we want to be. But right now, sometimes you got to hit rock bottom before you realize, okay, let's go. Pick yourselves up, get a plan, get to work, because you can succeed at Florida State.
Yeah, and it'll be a collective thing because it's not only going to take recruiting, obviously, in the more traditional sense, solid recruiting classes, high school into college. You may have to dabble into a grad transfer market as well. We'll talk more about that with Ira and certainly with Danny Cannell before we're done. Tamari and Terry took to social media and released a statement overnight as well, thanking Florida State fans for the support, but also talking about how he feels badly in not reaching a goal. The quote is, "It breaks my heart. I cannot finish what I started here at Florida State. I came back for a reason, and while I fell short of that goal, I hope you know that I gave it my all through personal loss and injury. Ultimately, I didn't think I could help my teammates to the best of my ability the rest of the season, and I've decided the best choice was for me to use this time to heal and recover. I'm not sure what the next chapter will be for me, but I'll always have love for FSU. Go Noles." And that is Tamari and Terry. So, arguably, the two top players on each side of the ball are out for the remainder of the year. Marvin Wilson will still stay with the team along with Devontae Love Taylor, as Pac said. But essentially, Wilson's career at Florida State ends. Terry's a little more pronounced. So is James Blackman. The quarterback situation right away, and we'll talk about this with Ira coming up, it's really going to be about Jordan Travis or Chubba Purdy. Mike Norvell was not ready to make a commitment to Jordan Travis's status for Saturday night's ball game in Raleigh against NC State. So then that leaves Chubba Purdy and Tate Rodemaker as the really the only two options remaining of quarterbacks that have taken a snap this year for the Noles. Pack, it's a long road back. It's a road that's been choppy. The end of Jimbo Fisher wasn't particularly clean. The 18-month administration of Willie Taggart wasn't exactly, you know, wine and roses. And now it's been some low cards for Mike Norvell of a lot of different factions, right? The pandemic and all the other things that have happened that have made it a bumpy ride. I tell you what now, you're right about one thing. The brand name is unbelievable. And the history and the track record and all those things, you know Florida State will have a chance. It's just a matter of being patient and working through the backside of this. And hopefully they can build on what's left of 2020 to a little bit, improve in 2021. And, yeah, I guess it's possible. And we've seen it with the implementation of grad players. You can make a pretty quick jump if you hit the right guy in the right spot.
I'm going to go to Marvin Wilson a second. You know, Marvin's appeared on our show multiple times. He's one of our favorites, right? I mean, truly one of our favorites. And I love having the interviews with the student athletes. I think it's the coolest thing that we do because you get a chance as an ACC fan, folks that you watch play, and this is true whether we're talking about football, basketball, any Olympic sport, and you realize, oh, I love their personality, they're great and whatever, and then you kind of follow along. Marvin Wilson represents that institution absolutely how you want it to be. You hope you had, you know, 85 Marvin Wilsons, not only from a talent standpoint, but the fact, dedication, and love for the institution. He could have taken the money last year and gone to the NFL, but the fact that he decided, hey, you know what? We've got unfinished business. I don't want to walk out at my school with the way that last season ended. I've got so much respect for this guy, for not only from his talent on the field, but more importantly, how he conducts business, how he handles himself, big picture, giving back to the community. Money can wait. Fame can wait. Let's take care of our business. And the fact that we're not going to see him play again stinks. And I wish him nothing but the best. And again, Florida State, I think eventually will figure this thing out, but it's going to take time. But for a guy like Marvin Wilson, Wes, we run across all kinds of cool student athletes and coaches and people in this league. It's one of the great things about the ACC. This is one of the great dudes right here. And the fact that we're not going to see Big 2-1 playing again in a Florida State uniform is really kind of sad. You know that everybody's career eventually comes to an end, and hopefully if you're good enough, you go to the next level. And we will see Marvin in the NFL. But when I heard all that news yesterday, that was the first one that hit me. We're like, doggone it, man. Marvin, you know, he came back for all the right reasons. He wants to go out on top, and here's how he's going to have to go through it, injured and watching his team suffer. He will still be a factor in the locker room. His impact on that community, that friend, that team, those players, you can't put a price tag on it. So I just want to say personally, I wish him the very best because we have really, really loved getting a chance to know him. And if Mike Norvell can go find a bunch of Marvin Wilsons, and they're certainly capable of doing it at Florida State, they'll turn this thing around. But Marvin Wilson's a special person.
Oh, absolutely. And he's a guy who I think the impact Marvin Wilson's had on the younger players, and that's one of the things when you start getting ready to do a broadcast with Florida State, you see all the freshmen, redshirt freshmen, sophomores, and redshirt sophomores that they have at their disposal. I mean, the running back situation stands out from that aspect alone. I think Marvin Wilson's leadership, his influence on those younger guys will certainly pay dividends to Mike Norvell and his staff. And for if not any other reason, Marvin Wilson's return helped put a foundation together that I think can help that program as it moves through the next couple of years, Pac, and back toward prominence, I'm sure is what they're hoping. And I would think so, that his leadership and all those type intangible things that he brings to the table certainly will help the young players as they move forward in their career. And maybe the payoff will be, next year, maybe it'll be a year after. But bottom line is I think Florida State will benefit from Marvin Wilson's presence in more ways than just football.
Here's what I'm interested to watch. Moving forward at the tail end of this season, again, knock on wood that we have games.
Right.
That's issue number one. Let's just assume we're going to play games. I want to see how Florida State responds, right? You did the game last week against Pitt. The week before against Louisville, that was an ole effort. Again, they got woodshedded. I've given you the numbers in terms of second half production. I get it at some point in time when your quarterbacks are all over the place, you got injuries, your offensive line, I understand all that. I just want to see Florida State. I don't care if you win a game. I don't care if you go 3-0, 0-3, whatever the case may be. I want to see the effort level from Florida State. I think this is one of those weeks, and you've got the game this weekend in Raleigh. And you know what? They'll be an underdog to NC State. NC State today is a better football team than Florida State, not to mention NC State's had success against the Noles. But I just want to see Florida State play hard. I don't care if you're a senior. Mm-hmm. Don't care if you're a freshman. None of that matters to me. Doesn't matter to me. I just want to see Florida State play hard. And I think if you get that as a fan for the duration of the season, no matter how many games you get a chance to play, you can at least say, okay, you know what? I got the locker room intact. Let Mike Norvell get to work and do his thing. And like I said, they didn't have a spring. They didn't have a summer. For a first-year head coach, this is a really difficult task. But I just want to see the effort level out of Florida State moving forward. If I'm turning on your game Saturday night, Wes, and I see NC State running up and down the field, and this is like, hey, Mark Packer ought to be out there playing two-hand touch, That's not going to cut it. I mean, you can't fool a Florida State fan from an effort standpoint. They've known good football from bad. So, all right, Florida State, tag you in. You made this announcement. You got these guys are out. You're having a tough year. Now show me that, you know what, every time you get a chance to play on Saturday, it matters. So that's what I want to see from Florida State for the duration of the season.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
I hope folks had a chance to partake with ACC Network late yesterday afternoon and into the evening because men's and women's basketball tip-off was rocking and rolling, and everything you need to know was happening last night and even tonight coming up. So hoops is right around the corner, Wes. I mean, we're sitting here with football on the brain. Needless to say, it is November, but we're basically 2 weeks away from tipping off.
Yeah, we had some news yesterday. Unfortunately, some of the football headlines crept into basketball when Miami's first ball game on November 25th with Stetson was postponed due to a positive COVID test within the Hatters program. Donnie Jones coaches that program in the Atlantic Sun Conference. They were going to come down and play Jim Larranaga to get started on the 25th. That game's now been postponed because of that COVID outbreak. A couple of other news items. Pittsburgh's announced only 1,250 people will be allowed for capacity at the Peterson Events Center on campus. And pretty soon here, maybe early next week, we'll have full graphic of just what you're going to see from a college basketball atmosphere. We'll get to more of that in just a moment. But I want to go back to this. Mike Bray, not yesterday, day before yesterday, at his basketball media availability in South Bend. Now, he has a player waiting a waiver, okay? And remember me telling you, Pac, that 220-some transfers have already been accepted, right? Immediate transfers. There are like seven or so guys that are waiting in limbo, or seven or so that have been declined that are being appealed, and like another dozen that are in limbo at this point. Well, leave it to our man Bray to come up with probably the most realistic and accurate thing to do, and he just went out and told the NCAA.
Trey came under the total understanding, like what we've done with all our transfers, you sit a year in residency, you get older, you get stronger, then you get eligible. About 3 weeks ago, along with Brent Moberg and our compliance, we came up with a proposal, and Brent did a fabulous job writing it. My theory was this should be an all-hands-on-deck season to get through the season. And we're already going down the line, the NCAA, that is, in college basketball. We've seen a lot of waivers, all right? Kids are getting waivers to play, and more are getting many more are getting waivers than denied. And I get that. That's fine. That's great. I don't know why anyone on my roster would be ineligible in a COVID season. Trey Wirtz could be my seventh man one night if we're going to play NC State, and we wouldn't have to cancel the game. If he's ineligible under the residency rules of sitting out, I may have to cancel a game if I have some guys that test positive that are in quarantine. So we proposed this 3 weeks ago. All hands on deck. Anybody on your roster should be eligible to put in the game. And I think it naturally fits with, we gave everyone their year of eligibility back a month ago anyways. Trey Wirtz, let's look at Trey's case. He still has his two full years of eligibility that he was expecting when he came here, even if he plays half the games this year or only 12 minutes. So I would hope, and I think there's some momentum picking up on this. It's just logical. You look at football games have been canceled because there's not enough guys. Utah didn't have enough guys. What is it, 53? What's the basketball number going to be? I think you need seven to play a game. No one said anything. We don't have a league rule. I've not seen a national rule. But anyone on my roster or anyone's roster should be eligible to play. And we're going to continue to campaign and lobby the NCAA. I believe some other leagues have picked up on this. The other reason is in January, everyone's going to be eligible on a transfer moving forward anyways. You know, the year in residency is going to go out the window most likely at the convention in January. But in the midst of this, if I have a roster of 12 guys, which I do, Trey Wirtz being one of them, Elijah Morgan, my walk-on, I need all those guys eligible night to night because I'm going to need them all to get through 5 months.
Mike Bray, let me say something to you. I'm going to look you right in the eye here. There's one major problem with everything you just said. A huge problem. It makes too much sense for the NCAA. What he said is 1,000,000,000% correct. Absolutely spot on. And it's all hands on deck. And there should even be any excuses. This should be one of those deals. If you're Mark Emmert in the NCAA, it should take you literally, I don't know, 2 seconds ago, you're right. Let's move on. 100% right. I mean, how could you argue against what Mike Bray just said? I mean, I would love to see or hear somebody say, well, that's all fine and good, but here's why it doesn't work. That person doesn't exist on the planet. Mike Bray is 100% right.
When he offered you the example of a team having to cancel a game because they don't. And, oh, by the way, how come we don't know what the minimum number is?
Amen.
How come the NCAA hasn't told us that? Are we going to pull a Gene Hackman and Hoosiers and, you know, my team's on the floor? No, coach. You've got to have X number of guys, seven or eight or whatever the number is, run out there for warmups. We got all that covered in football pretty early, by the way.
Yep.
When the conferences had to make a decision about how the teams were going to be structured, it was actually based on offensive linemen and defensive linemen, which, by the way, I thought was pretty smart.
Yep.
How come the NCAA hasn't put any kind of guideline out there into, hey, coach, you got to have 7 guys. Hey, coach, you got to have 8 guys. We're starting in 10 days. Hello. Can we get that part worked out, you think? Unbelievable the way this organization has handed out coupons for eligibility. They've done all this stuff. They've tried to come out looking like this. Haven't addressed any of the financial concerns, obviously, except, oh, by the way, we've got to have the basketball tournament. We got that part. But you know what we don't have? The insane, archaic rules you have about eligibility and transfer, where on the flip of the light, you decide somebody's not eligible to this year for the transfer. Meanwhile, 200 other cats are. Makes no sense whatsoever, and the organization cannot even outline what they want to do during basketball season.
Preach, Wes Durham. You are right on, man.
Unbelievable.
I can't even add anything to that other than the fact when I first read and heard Bray's commentary the other day, it stunned me when he said, oh, we don't know, 7 guys. And I assumed that that had been addressed. But when you see a head basketball coach go, what's our number? I was stunned. I was like, oh, my goodness. How can we be this far down the road, less than, 2 weeks now from tip-off, and we don't have the answer to that question? It makes no – again, it shouldn't shock anybody, but here we are. But what Mike Bray said is absolutely right.
Hey, Pack, I'll give you one more. The NCAA set out all these testing guidelines, remember, for student-athletes? Remember that part where – student athletes, if you were going to participate, here was the NCAA testing guidelines. Is that supposed to be the same for basketball? Is that supposed to be the same in the spring and all these other elements? I mean, you know, the NBA announced last night, there's a report on the Athletic website that the NBA is not going to have anybody closer than 30 feet to the floor that hasn't been tested and cleared in the previous 2 days for any game. Are there some sort of guidelines the NCAA is going to provide for their sport? Remember, this is their sport. They are happy to tell you that they own college basketball. Well, wouldn't you think that there'd be some degree of, I mean, you want to make sure everybody's jersey looks right. They all drink out of the same cup, play on the same looking floor. Shouldn't you have some say-so and kind of wouldn't you want to set up a guideline as to how we're actually going to function and do these games? Ain't gotten that either.
You know, watching football, you know, maneuver through this has been really, I mean, it's really been phenomenal to watch. And you knew there were going to be some potholes and you're going to, you know, turn an ankle here and miss a game that you knew that was going to happen.
Right.
I'll be honest with you, Wes. I think basketball is going to be more difficult than football. And I don't mean to be the gloom and doom guy on this one because I'm rooting for everybody to play. I mean, I want to be entertained. And again, the student athletes in the schools have done a phenomenal job just getting us to this point. But basketball could be really tricky. And I'm not really sure what it's going to do, right? I'm not sure. You know, we're getting to the point now in football. Even this week, it was some schools like in the SEC where, hey, it was only 1 or 2 positive cases. But the contact tracing wiped everybody out. And, you know, you start talking about one person gets tested positive on a basketball team. And we've talked about how one person gets positive tests and wipes out a group, a position group. What happens to a basketball team when you got 12 dudes, right? You got 12 ladies, 12 guys. And you go on an airplane trip and somebody gets test positive because they get it. I mean, how are we going to operate with this? The 10-day quarantine. I mean, you're talking about wiping out 2 weeks of games, potentially. I don't know. I am fascinated to see how this is going to play. I really am.
Well, I'll give you one analogy and one example that would concern me immensely at this point, and that is what contact tracing. Remember what coaches have told us in football? The positive tests are one thing. The contact tracing is another.
Yep.
And the depth of contact tracing is what wipes out, you know, potential games more so than the positive test, right? In a scenario with a basketball team, because of the minimum numbers, you've got to be incredibly detailed with the testing and the results of those tests before you travel. Here's why. Because once you travel, if you travel as a team and you travel with a positive test, the contact tracing could wipe that team out, as you just said, for 2 weeks. The positive test would be 10 days under most of these guidelines. The contact tracing goes 2 weeks. Well, that's 2 weeks of games. You can't, well, you might be able to get them back, but I'm not sure how you'd get them back. And just kind of glancing at the calendar of all these games we're going to get into, we've really got some, we're going to have to be very nimble and very flexible come wintertime to get some of this done. You miss a week of games, it's going to be hard to get a week of games put back on the schedule at the end, on the back end of it.
Well, you've already seen, without really brilliant scheduling, and I think the conferences for the most part, I'm talking about right now ACC, SEC, Big 12, did a great job from a scheduling standpoint to allow flexibility. Obviously, the Big 10 and the Pac-12 themselves up against a wall, and you know, if you have a stumble, hey, it's a lost game, man. There are no options. Hoops, like I said, to me, on the sideline here, watching all this, basketball is going to be fascinating to watch to see how we can get through this thing. And unlike football, I think there's more pressure on basketball to have an ending. I hope we have an ending to college football. There's no guarantees as we sit here today on November the 12th. But here's what I do know. I know that Mike Bray was right with what he said. And I also know that the NCAA men's basketball tournament must be played. It must be played. Yep. I don't care if it's in March, April, May, June, whatever. They got to play it. Because without it, for the second year in a row, as Mike Krzyzewski told everybody 4 months ago, we cannot afford to be without it. And I'm talking about the NCAA and college athletics. So I think in some respects, you almost have to work backwards with basketball that, hey, we got the finish line almost should be the starting line. We must have the tournament, so let's work backwards to figure out a way to have a season. So, I think basketball is going to be more difficult and more interesting than football just to see how a season unfolds. Grab your popcorn.
Well, the NCAA, to kind of tie up what Coach Bray said, the NCAA's got about 12 days to do the right thing and grant all these waivers, Pack. I mean, come on. What are we doing, right? I mean, we're trying to get schools to play schedules in a pandemic and test and all the money that's being spent on behalf of the testing and everything else and the sacrifices these young people are being made. And you got somebody who's sitting out because of a technicality and paperwork, and yet he's being or she's being subjected to the same type things. Come on, just do the right thing. Let's move on here. Let's make big boy decisions, 21st century type things, and grant everybody the waiver to play their sport during a pandemic.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Tons of guests between now and 10 a.m. What you're holding up that number one for again, Wes? What's going on over there?
True or false is coming up, by the way. Get ready. True or false with the Lumberjacks coming up. Big weekend of true false coming. I can feel it.
Okay. We'll find out. That's another 10 minutes away. Yesterday, though, our buddy Kenny Pickett, quarterback for Pitt, he's back in action. He joined us on Packer and Durham, and we started off by just saying, hey, October had to be tough. Man, you're over there injured. You're wearing a baseball hat. There can't be anything worse as a player sitting there watching everybody else have a good time.
Right. You know, as a competitor, you know, it's very tough to watch. You know, but due to my injury, I kind of had Florida State circled, you know, on the timetable. That was probably the quickest I could return and the safest way possible. So I was really focused on getting back for Florida State.
Kenny, what do you learn? I mean, I saw the Coach Pickett version against Notre Dame where we're sitting upstairs with the headset on and the ball cap, and I got to believe that Coach Pickett was not as happy as Kenny Pickett was taking snaps last Saturday. But did you glean anything from seeing the ball game up top 1 week just to to maybe look at it from another angle?
Right. I mean, I think it's just a different perspective to look at it. You know, I took advantage of, you know, really helping Joey and trying to be a, you know, a coach for him as well, and just, you know, see things and get to him on the sideline the second half of that Notre Dame game. Try to help him out as much as I can. And, you know, obviously during practice.
By the way, I know you want to play, right? I mean, that's the ultimate deal. You're a competitor. But could you see yourself being a coach somewhere down the road?
I do. I definitely like to stay involved in the game. You know, I feel like I have some knowledge that I could help a lot of, you know, young quarterbacks and help take their game to the next level. So that's definitely something I'd be interested in.
All right, I want to get to the toughness aspect of this, because Coach Narduzzi visited with our TV crew last week, and he said, you know, we'll see. He was out there, and he did not sound overly optimistic. Now, maybe he was selling me a little bit, okay? When did you feel like you were a go for Saturday in Tallahassee?
I'd probably say Thursday. Tuesday and Wednesday was a little it was a little rough at practice trying to get through. Thursday felt, you know, much better than I did on Tuesday. And just having that practice gave me a lot of confidence to go out there, and I felt like I could do what I needed to do, you know, on Saturday against Florida State. So I'd say Thursday.
Kenny, so the game starts, right? And I know you're excited. From the rust standpoint, knocking that bad boy off, once the game starts, does it feel like, hey, listen, let's just go play? I've done this 1,000 times. Or did you feel like, hey, listen, it took a while to get into a rhythm?
I'd say I don't think it took too long. I mean, I had that big play. I think it was, you know, the third play on that third down to Jared. Once I had that play, I kind of, you know, got back into the groove. It felt like I didn't really miss a beat. So, you know, it just felt great to get back out there and get back in the huddle and really just, you know, compete with my team again.
Yeah, Kenny, it's an interesting point, because the throw to Wayne, certainly then, it almost kind of like took the plastic back off again for you, because after that point, you guys as a football team really seemed to settle in, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that, you know, the defense feeds off the offense feeds off the defense, and I think our special teams had a, you know, a really, really good game. Kirk Christodoulou, obviously, you know, was like the, you know, national punter of the week. You know, he had an unbelievable game. So I think it was really our best complimentary football that we've played up to this point.
Kenny, tell me about the in-game stuff with Coach Quip, because a lot of times when we're doing it, and Saturday was the third time that Roddy Jones and I have had your guys' game, and we'll notice during the game that after a play, you'll walk over to him and he'll say something, and there'll be almost like a little conversation with the play clock running. How does that go? Is it usually pretty good, or is there every once in a while, does he say, by the way, don't jack this up or something like that?
If I miss something, he'll definitely let me know about it. It works pretty well. With the ankle, it was a little different. We did a little bit more of hand signals, and sometimes, you know, Nick Patty would walk out and try and relay the play. I was a little worried about the play clock, but, you know, throughout the game, I got really comfortable with just kind of walking halfway and then walking back. So it actually wasn't too much of a problem. So, you know, I expect it to be pretty smooth from here on out.
Hey, by the way, speaking of Patty, what's up with all the scores? I know as a quarterback, you wanted to distribute the ball, but I mean, I saw those wheels. You had that rushing touchdown. Nobody could catch you. All of a sudden, Patty's coming in and getting all those scores, man. What's up with that?
I know. I had to throw him a couple. He got two, so we'll see what happens this week.
Yeah, Roddy Jones said on the air that here comes Nick Patty, the touchdown vulture. I mean, he's stealing your numbers, Kenny. What's going on with that? I mean, you throw for scores, and Nick Patty's coming in. You had to take the 10-yard run just to keep him on the bench, I thought.
I know. Coach Whip was joking. I think we lead the country in getting tackled on the 1-yard line, so we gotta work on getting in the end zone and finishing it.
You know, you laugh about that, but, you know, I think back to your season, and not to put salt in the wound, but hey, you got there at the 1-yard line against NC State. I still go back to that game a lot this year. And I know, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, you could play that game all you want. But October really was a rough month for you, not only from a physical standpoint for you personally, but even from the team standpoint. It just kind of got off tracks a little bit.
Yeah. I think, you know, we dealt with adversity really well over the bye week. That was the big thing. Get to the bye week, get healthy, and then bounce back for Florida State. And it's a 4-game season from here on out, you know. So we start off 1-0, and now we got Georgia Tech coming in, or we're going down to Georgia Tech this week. So really we're focused on this one.
Kenny, take me through, I mean, Georgia Tech's a team when we're in divisions you guys see every year. Last year, obviously, they're a different team. They've changed schematically on offense. They've certainly changed a little bit of what they do defensively. But yet these always seem to be relatively close games. I mean, they seem to be hard-fought, turn-on-a-dime type deals. So is that kind of what you expect Saturday night?
Yeah, definitely expecting a four-quarter fight. I think they're a really well-coached team. That they play really hard for their coach. You can just tell on the film. Like you said, in the past 4 years, I think it's always been a close game. So, you know, we're not expecting anything less going down there this weekend.
Kenny, one of the things I've talked about, not only on this show, but also the radio show in the afternoon, is the dedication necessary by all student-athletes, whether we're talking about football or any of the Olympic sports. We're now in the middle of November, and you guys have been getting after this for a long, long time, just trying to stay safe and healthy for the opportunity to play. Can you describe to the viewers and listeners how difficult that has been? Not only the whole process, but now that you're in halfway past the season, you mentioned it's a four-game deal coming down the stretch. We come in the middle of November. At the end of the semester, you can see it. You're a senior. You're going through the whole routine. How difficult has this been away from football just to be safe and healthy?
Right. I mean, it's pretty difficult. You just have to know who you're around, really, and kind of stay. You know, Coach Narduzzi talks about your bubble and just stay in your bubble so you can't let a lot of outside people come in. Just because you don't know where they've been and who they've been around. So in that standpoint, it's really been the facility in my house and you know, doing schoolwork and rehabbing these past couple of weeks to get back. So, you know, in that sense, I've kind of been pretty focused on what I have to do just to get back for the team. But I would say it's tougher for guys that are in a dorm and guys that are in, like, an apartment complex that are around a lot more people. I'm rolling around my four other roommates, so it's been kind of easier for me. But for those guys, I'd say it'd be, you know, a lot more of a struggle and a lot more of a test to, you know, stay in their room and not go around other sports teams because you don't know what's going on with their team as well. So overall, I think it's been really tough, but I'm really proud of the way our team's handled it this far.
It was terrific having Kenny on the show yesterday. More importantly, it was just good to see him back playing again. And Pitt's a different team now that he is back under center.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham, ACC Network, Masters getting underway, even though I think they're in a little bit of a delay right now. That's going to drive Andrew Brooks nuts. But we've got the Lumberjacks and a little true and false. It's time to get out your pen and paper and keep score, folks. Here we go.
Hello.
Look at Josh Macri. Saddled up, ready to ride.
Yeah.
That's right.
Syracuse fever.
Yeah, always. All right, guys. First question, true or false? I might need Anish Shroff's daughter to help me out here. But true or false, even though Trevor is back, we'll continue to see DJ Uiagalelei on the field in every game remaining for the Clemson Tigers this season. True or false?
True.
That was close.
True. Uiagalelei, you're going to get him. I'm going to say every single game.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. True. You're going to see him in some form or fashion every game. Yes. Series, snap, whatever. Yes. Agree. True.
Why wouldn't you? After his two performances against BC and Notre Dame, it's going to be great to see Trevor Lawrence back doing his thing. But why wouldn't you see number five get some love? Just saying.
Why wouldn't you – let me ask you this. Do you think if you're Tony Elliott, you draw up a play where both of them are on the field for the same snap?
You got to figure that's in the repertoire somewhere. But, you know, as Dabo said earlier this week, you know, they would have run him a little bit more against Notre Dame, but he was injured. Guy still threw for, what, 400 and whatever yards. He got a banged-up shoulder. He was out of sight.
Exactly
he wasn't the reason – Clemson lost Saturday night, but they got to get healthy other spots. But I think you're going to see DJ in every game, be my guess.
Yep, I agree with that. True.
All right, moving Next. On. True or false, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter will rush for more yards than Kenneth Walker and Christian Beal-Smith when the Heels and the Deeks face off this weekend in the Food Lion Cup?
Ooh, that's a good question. Food Lion
Cup.
Woody.
Woody, after coaching these fine football schools, you know me, I like running the football. And we got outstanding running backs at North Carolina with Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. And over Wake Forest, they got outstanding college football player Kenneth Walker III and Christian Beal Smith. I think at the end of the day, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter will be our finest football players. They'll turn the ball up to get it north and south. And run that football for the Tar Heels. Then we'll bring on our fine place kicker to kick the extra point and lead 7-0.
So, what are you picking there, Coach Dooley? Which one are you picking?
All right, Javonte Williams and Michael Carter. They'll be my selections, Woody, as we move forward against the University of Wake Forest this weekend.
I'm going to go the other way on this.
All right.
Because I think Sam Howell's going to be able to toss it. And, Dave Clawson's going to have a couple extra weeks, getting a little extra time to figure this thing out. And I think Wake's going to have to run the ball. And I think they can run the ball. I think it's going to be a fun game. Sorry. Listen, we're going to break these things down tomorrow hot and heavy. But there are three games in particular that kind of jump off the page that, like I said, accounting next week is not going to be easy, regardless of the outcomes. Accounting was easy this week. Next week will not be. So that's a good ball game. Food Lion Cup. Heels win that, they get the cup.
Do you think we could ever acquire any video of a Bill Dooley television show talking about highlights, just going
That'd
over the
great.
Highlights? How awesome would that be?
That would be tremendous. Oh. Somebody's got those somewhere.
Here's our running back. James Boom Boom Bettison.
Mike Voigt.
He was on the dive play for four. Mike Voigt.
Yeah, that's the one I used to love when he had Mike Voigt.
And
you could hear the papers rustling as he tried to keep up with the highlights that were written down for him. Have it rolled up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tremendous.
Yeah, have it rolled up like John Wooden.
Yep.
And again, not trying to give folks ideas. But Carolina Wake Forest, they need to play every year. That needs to happen every year, Pac.
State and Duke should play every year. North Carolina Wake Forest should play every year. I mean, it's just in this day and age, logistics, come on. That should not be hard.
They can all work on it. They come on. We got to get that game. That game's got to be played, doesn't it?
Yep. I am with you 100%.
All right. I know. All right. Next.
All right, guys, a little respite with some hoops. And as we announced yesterday, Virginia was predicted to win the ACC in men's basketball this year. Courtesy of Brian Ives, voters have correctly predicted the ACC champ on the men's side just twice in the past decade. So, true or false, Virginia will win the regular season conference this year.
True.
I have a question.
True.
Ask away, Wes.
Is Ives in witness protection? What's happened to Ives?
He's not in witness protection.
Is he in Connecticut?
Right. Yes.
Is he in Connecticut? He is? Okay. Answer to the question, by the way, is true. Virginia will finish first in the regular season.
Well, we were pretty
Virginia
brave.
Virginia will win the regular season, in my opinion.
Yeah, we were pretty brave to jump on that bandwagon pretty quick, weren't we? I think they're going to be really good.
Well,
they're going to be.
Yeah. Good. I mean, we're spending a lot of time, people wondering why Sam Hauser makes first team all ACC. And I'm like, Jay Huff, Thomas Walden Tensai, Kihei Clark, Casey Morsell, Reese Beekman apparently is pretty good. All of a sudden, I'm counting like 7-8 deep on a team that we already know knows how to play.
And let's throw in the fact this Tony Bennett guy, I think he's a pretty good coach. And 104-24. That's all you got to know. 104-24 in the last 7 years. That's what Virginia has done in conference play. And when the Hoos look in the rearview mirror, you know who they see? Everybody. They're going to be a tough out.
Yes, they do.
They see everybody. So that's all you got to know.
Yeah.
All right, guys, last one. Today, of course, first round of the Masters. As we know, 7 ACC alums in the Masters field. True or false, 4 of them will make the cut.
True.
Ooh.
I'm going to go positive on this. I'm going to go true. Larry will not be one of them, however. The 87 Masters champion will not make. No, he's not
Come
making
on.
The cut. Not making the cut. I'm going to go
four.
Over. Four. Yeah, I'm over. At least four.
Wow. I'm going to go four on the number. So that makes it true, too.
That makes it true, Wes.
I know, but you said over four. I'm going four on the number.
That's fine. The question is,
for those of you that care
the
about
the line
what I think.
Is four. Four up, yay
true.
Or nay? Yes.
You said more than four. I
think
I
it will be
four.
More than four. I'm going to be positive today on the Masters.
Okay, fine. We'll Won't check back Mize, on Monday and see what you come up with.
I just hope Larry Mize doesn't show up on the first tee like Sandy Lau with a pair of suspenders looking like Bill Murray. That's what I'm hoping.
Hey, wait a second. Wait. Sandy Lau started on the 10th tee. He's playing Amen Corner right out of the gate. Sandy's getting that out of the way.
Yeah, that's like I said.
Wearing suspenders and probably Velcro strap golf shoes.
Yeah, when you show up looking like Bill Murray, you know what? We'll get that thing out of here real soon. Wait, just keep playing. Get out of here. Let me tell you now, you're playing at Augusta National at the Masters. You don't show up no stinking suspenders on. What
suspenders.
Is this?
Suspenders.
This is not the Chico Stick Open. I mean, come on, man. This is a real deal. You can't show up in a pair of suspenders on the first tee of a major golf championship. I don't care how old you are. I mean, if your pants don't fit,
you know what?
You've made enough money, go buy a pair of slacks that fit. Get some Velcro strips or something. You know, don't go on the first tee at Augusta National or the 10th tee or wherever you're starting with a pair of suspenders on. Good grief. That's brutal.
You know what happens when you get suspended? You wear suspenders through Amen Corner. You know what happens, don't you, Pac?
They just take you out, don't they? They just take you into the woods back there on 13. You never reappear again. Is that what happens?
You get a letter. You're going to get a letter.
Get the letter. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm just going to tell you
you're
this.
You're going to get a letter.
If you ever see me, I'm going to just make a referendum here. If you ever see me in public wearing a pair of suspenders, you have every right to push me down a flight of steps. Come on. You cannot be a participant at the Masters and show up
on the first tee from Cartersville, Georgia, Westerum,
and come rolling in there with a pair of suspenders. Get out of here with that. Please.
All right.
Buy a pair of pants that fit, man.
And Greg Norman. Greg Norman's waking up this morning looking around the room going, I lost to that guy?
Right. Right. You lost to that guy.
Yeah. Okay.
Come on. That is terrible.
I lost to that guy?
That
He's
is
wearing
terrible.
Suspenders and I look like a Greek god. What's going on? I lost to that guy?
The Packer and Durham Podcast.